Welcome to History Class After Hours. I'm Joseph Barron. Joining me for our last episode of the season is Brian.
Hello.
We've made it.
Yep.
We've made it.
We have.
Today we are going to go out with a bang.
A bang?
Literally.
Oh.
We're going to talk about William the Conqueror.
Ooh.
Also known as William of Normandy. Also known as William of, I can't say it, but anyway.
Yeah, I know what it is. Okay. Don't worry.
So, going a little bit of a background, what's going on in Europe at this point. You have people that are called Norsemen, also known as
Vikings.
They began the raid Normandy in the late 8th century. That's where the term Normandy actually comes from. It's like the land of the Norse.
I'm going to be there this summer.
Jealous. So that is, let's see, the western coast of France.
Yeah, like northwest.
Northwest, yep. So the Vikings would begin permanent settlement in the area in 911. After the French king, Charles the Simple, ceded Normandy to the Viking leader, Rollo.
Why was he called Charles the Simple?
I actually had to look that up. So I was like, is he like what we now think of the term simple? It actually meant he was, it was because of the kindness of his soul.
Mm.
So they said he was a simple person.
That's good.
You want to know what his dad's name was?
Oh no. Was it Arthur the Unready?
Louis the Stammerer.
Ah.
You know who his cousin was?
Who?
Charles the Fat. Alright. He eventually replaces Charles the Fat.
Ah.
So yeah, Charles the Simple replaces Charles the Fat. They don't hold back here on names of people. But Normandy would soon become a base of operations for Vikings that were planning on raiding England and all those islands, Ireland, which they did quite a bit. So the increased relations between England and the Vikings, King Ethelred, the Unready of England, will take Emma, who was the sister of Richard II, as his second wife.
I mean, I'm not surprised because it's a royal family, but like, still.
Mm. But hang on to your seats, about to get really confusing.
All right.
I'm about to throw out a lot of names here. All right, but setting up what's about to happen. So in 1013, the Danish king, Sven the First, will take over England, and Ethelred will seek refuge in Normandy. He's like, all right, we're going to go stay with the in-laws. All right. Sven will die, though, the following year, and Ethelred will return home to rule. It's like, all right, guy just kicked me out, it's dead, I'm going back home. The issue is Sven's son, C-Nut, I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it, C-N-U-T.
Probably.
Or is it Newt?
I don't know.
Will contest Ethelred's claim to the throne. Ethelred will die in 1016, and C-Nut will become king of England along with Denmark and Norway, and he'll create what is called the North Sea Empire. Ethelred and Emma have two sons, though, Edward and Alfred, and they go into exile back in Normandy. So they're going back to the in-laws.
Hmm.
All right. However, Emma's going to stay behind and become the second wife of C-Nut.
Oh my gosh.
Not sure. Well, he dies in 1035. And once again, the English throne becomes vacant. And this time, it'll be claimed by Harold Harefoot.
Did he have, like, a lot of hair on his feet?
I couldn't figure out why they called him Harefoot.
Okay.
But anyway, that is his son from his first wife. Harthacnut, which is Emma's son with him, with C-Nut, will become the king of Denmark.
This is a lot of names.
Yes, it's going to be worse.
Oh no.
Yeah, it may be helpful to have a piece of paper or something out here. Well, Alfred will then return to England to visit his mother. Some believe it was to claim the throne. Well, he's going to be captured, blinded, and then die a couple days later.
Oh, is this the guy that got, like, the red-hot poker in the eyes?
Probably.
All right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, then Emma goes into exile in Flanders, until Harold would die in 1040, and Hrothgar would become king. Well, he dies in 1042, and his half-brother Edward would become king and rule for the next 24 years. So he stabilizes things a little bit.
All right.
But keep this in mind, all right? This family line is going to come into play, all right? So this leading to our main character, William, who was born in either 1027 or 1028 in Normandy. They don't really know.
All right.
He was the only son of Robert I, also known as Robert the Magnificent, who was the son of Richard II. Remember the guy that was the guy that gave his sister Emma away to become Queen of England.
Yeah.
So that Emma is his great aunt.
Okay.
Keep that in mind. All right.
All right.
It's gonna give him reason to claim something later on in life. His mother's name was Herleva, who was the daughter of a tanner. Herleva and Robert would never marry, which would give William one of his nicknames, William the whatever we're not going to say. All right. Robert would eventually become Duke of Normandy, but he would die returning from a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. I guess all his advisors were like, don't go, don't go. He's like, I gotta go. And then he's end up dying.
Mm.
So that leaves William as the Duke of Normandy at the age of 7. All right, so he's going to face several challenges once he becomes Duke. One was his illegitimate birth and his young age. He was lucky, though, to get support from his great uncle, Archbishop Robert, as well as the King of France, Henry I. However, Robert's going to die in 1037, and Normandy is just going to... And Normandy is going to plunge into chaos. Chaos is going to last until 1047. And basically, all these people come out of the woodwork to fight William for power of Normandy. All right. Alan of Brittany would take custody of William first. However, he's going to be killed in 1039. Then Gilbert of Brienne would take charge. And then he gets killed within a couple months. Another guy, Turchetil, will be another guardian of William, but he is going to be killed at the same time as Gilbert. It's not good to try to adopt William here.
Yeah.
Yeah, all these people are dying. Osborne would be the next set up, but he was also killed, this time, though, in William's bedroom as he was sleeping. William's uncle would have to hide him in the houses of peasants from time to time as more and more people tried to go kill William so they could lay claim to his seat. Eventually, though, William's going to find some stability and be raised with his cousins, William Fitzosborne, Roger de Beaumont, and Roger of Montgomery.
Mm.
They are going to stay extremely loyal to William and go with him through the rest of his life.
Fitzosborne is such a cool last name.
It's spelled weird.
Oh.
It's Fitz, capital O-S-B-E-R-N.
Mm, okay, Osborne. Not as cool. If it was like Ozzy Osbourne, then it would have been way cooler. But
so even though Normandy was in chaos, many of the nobles still supported William. King Henry I of France will still support him. However, people will still try to kill William. In one case, Guy of Burgundy tried to seize William at a place called Valgonis. William was able to escape, though, and seek refuge with Henry I. In 1047, William will return to Normandy with Henry I and claim victory at the Battle of Val-as-Dunes. Soon after, he reassumed power. He proclaimed a truce of God in order to create peace and stability, but this only mildly worked. Truce of God was something that happened during the Middle Ages where the Pope and the bishops got together and they got all these like lords together and said, here are holy relics. Promise you won't kill each other anymore. On these holy relics. And they said, sure. And they
it, yeah. No.
And then the Pope tried to step in. He's like, all right, you gotta kill each other. You can only do it on Tuesdays.
Is that like an actual thing that happened?
Like, they started making the Pope. That's why there's so many saints' days, because basically it was like very uncouth to fight a war or a battle on a saint's day, because it was a holiday, like a holy day.
Yeah.
So the Pope just started throwing all these saint's days out there, trying to stop these people from all killing each other. All right. William would next target Guy of Burgundy, who, remember, tried getting him before. He would lay siege to his castle and then successfully exile him in 1050. Next, William's going to team up with Henry again to battle the Count of Anjou, Jeffrey Martel. Wonder if he's really a Charles Martel.
Maybe.
The two were able to successfully drive Jeffrey from the countryside, and William would gain control of more lands. So he is starting. He is starting to go on the offensive here. However, in 1051, Jeffrey and Henry I would join forces against William, and supported by nobles that were rebelling against William in Normandy. So Henry now turns on William. He's like, this guy's getting a little too powerful for my liking. I am the king of France. These lands are right next to my kingdom. I'm going to go find Jeffrey, who's in exile, bring him back, and we're going to go fight William.
It just doesn't seem real that there's a guy named Jeffrey all the way back in, like, 10-something.
Or it could be Geoffrey.
Maybe.
Geoffrey.
That sounds...
the way it's spelled, it's G-E-O.
Yeah.
So in 1054, Henry and Norman rebels would launch a double invasion of Normandy. All right. William would split his forces in two, which you're never supposed to do. William would face up against Henry, while his supporters would face off against Jeffrey. Both forces would be victorious. And basically, Henry and Jeffrey don't give up. They try another failed invasion in 1057. At this point in 1058, William would go on the offensive and invade County of Dreux. Henry would attempt to dislodge him, but die in process. Count Jeffrey would soon die afterwards. So William wins. He wins a lot,
yeah.
As you'll see. I think he only loses like one battle in his life. All right. But the deaths of Henry and Jeffrey would cement William's power as the Duke of Normandy. In the early 1050s, William would further solidify power with the marriage of Matilda of Flanders. Flanders was one of the more powerful French states. The marriage would also be blessed by the Pope, and the two would have 10 children all in all.
Whoa.
Yes. And William, you're going to see, he is going to have a very close relationship with the church and the Pope. Kind of on speed dial with one of their besties. All right. Now we're going back to England. In 1051, King Edward, remember the guy that brought stability to England for 24 years, is going to die. Problem is, he has no kids.
Ah.
So William, who was grandson of Edward's uncle, apparently was told by Edward that he would be the next king of England. This claim, however, is going to be opposed by Godwin, the Earl of Essex, which was one of the more powerful families in England at the time. He was a member of the, like I said, the more powerful family, and his daughter Edith had married Edward in 1043. So he's like, well, this somehow gives me claim to it. At first, relationship between Edward and Godwin was good, but it soon soured, and Godwin would find himself exiled from England. This was the time, probably the time that Edward went to William and said, you know what, this throne's yours. I don't like my in-laws. In 1052, Godwin would return with armed forces, and a settlement was made between him and Edward. Godwin reclaimed his title and lands. 1053, Godwin would die, and his sons Harold and Tostig began to increase power. Harold quickly became the main contender to succeed King Edward. In 1057, just to make things more complicated, Edward the Exiled was the grandson of Ethelred II, returned to England. And he's going to start causing problems up in, like, Scotland and things. Well, Edward dies on January 5th, 1066. Harold was with the king on his deathbed and claims that Edward said, Harold, you are now king.
All right. This, he's already promised, like, two people, right?
Yes.
All right.
Norman sources do not dispute this claim. But they say it's illegitimate because he already gave the throne to William.
Yeah.
All right, so Harold will be crowned King of England on January 6, 1066 at the newly built Westminster Abbey.
Mm.
Didn't realize it was that old, but apparently it's really old.
Well, it kind of like, I think it, the Parliament House, I don't, oh wait, never mind. No, I'm thinking of the other building that looks like it. Yeah.
Never been there. I don't know. Big Ben, Parliament.
Yeah, I don't think that's like the same place.
Okay. So
I don't know.
So Harold's claim to the throne was not concrete, and there were other claims being made. One was from his brother Tostig, who he had forced into exile. You had King Harald Hardrada of Norway, who had claimed the throne as the uncle and the heir of King Magnus, who had made a pact with Harthacnut, remember that guy, in 1040, that if either Magnus or Harthacnut died without heirs, the other would succeed. So we're going way back in the woodwork, and then you had William. You got all these people saying, yeah, I'm the real king of England. No problems are going to happen here. All right, Tostig would be the first to attack, but failed to gain local support, and he had to flee to Scotland. According to the Norman writer William of Jumieges, William had meanwhile sent an embassy to King Harald Godwinson to remind Harald of his oath to support William's claim, although whether this embassy actually occurred is unclear. Harald assembled an army and a fleet because he knew William was coming. He's like, all right, we're going to wait for him. Okay, William's going to do the same. And then basically he's going to put his wife in charge of Normandy in his absence. All right, next, he's going to assemble an invasion fleet. Records say it was about 3,000 ships. And that's probably an over-exaggeration, but yeah, it was big. Also, he's going to have troops of Normans and mercenaries throughout France and the rest of Europe. He's basically promising them all land. Yes.
And so if it doesn't work, then a lot of soldiers are going to be disappointed.
Correct, yes. Because there's no... If you get to England and you get defeated, there's not really any way where to go.
Yeah.
You can't really get back on boats, and it's an all or nothing gamble.
Yeah.
His force is ready to disembark in August 1066, but weather would prevent this from happening. It's also believed that William had gained intelligence of Harold's forces being present on the coast, and William wanted to go meet as little resistance as possible. Because, like we just said, if you get defeated on the coast, you're basically done.
Yeah.
William also knew that most of Harold's forces would have to leave in September to attend the harvest. One of the bad things about having your army full of farmers.
Yeah.
So they got to leave eventually. Because of this delay, William would gain an advantage because of events completely out of his control. Tostig and Harald Hardrada joined forces. And they invade northern England in September of 1066. Receiving word of the invasion, Harald would have to turn his forces northward to meet that threat. They'd fight at the Battle of Stamford Bridge on September 25th, where both Tostig and Hardrada were killed.
I mean, that's kind of, like, disappointing, though. Because, like, they're Vikings, so, like, shouldn't they be able to, like, destroy the British? But
nope, I guess not.
Nope, all right.
During this time, William sets sail for England. He's like, they're gone. Now is our time. Facing a little resistance, he's going to ravage the interior and wait for Harald to return from the north. So this will lead to what is called the Battle of Hastings. So Harald is going to march south to go now meet William. He had to leave some of his army in the north, though, to deal with the threat that was still there. His men averaged marching 27 miles a day and were completely exhausted. He hoped to catch William by surprise, but William had scouts, and basically that never happened. On October 14, 1066, you get the Battle of Hastings. Harold's going to take a defensive position on top of Senlac Hill, and William's going to lead the attack. Although numbers for both armies were equal, William's going to have an advantage because he actually has cavalry and archers.
Mm.
Harald just has foot soldiers. All right. Harald's men are going to form a shield wall on top of the hills and throw back William's men, inflicting heavy casualties. But Harald's men lack discipline. As William's men retreat, Harald's men attack them and basically give up their shield wall, and then they just get cut down by the cavalry. Rumors began that William was killed in this attack. But then he pops out, and he's like, I'm still alive. Rally on me, guys.
And then he got shot in the eye, right?
Harald does, yes.
Yeah.
And then William's like, you know what? This whole retreating tactic worked. So we're just going to do that for the rest of the battle. And that's what they do. They're going to do what are called feigns, where they fake like they're attacking, and then they're going to like fake like they're retreating, and then Harald's men are going to chase after them, and they get cut down again. The decisive event, though, is going to be when Harald is killed. One account has him being killed by William. Another account has an arrow going through his eye. Another account has an arrow going through his head. Either way, he's dead.
Yeah.
And his troops run away at that point. The battle was costly for both sides. Estimates are that 50% of the men that were engaged were killed. Pretty graphic. Harold's body is then going to be dismembered. Only parts of it were identified because of like a birthmark or something. Mm. His mother is going to offer William gold for the body, but William's going to refuse. William will order that the body be thrown in the ocean. Not sure if that's happened or not, because there's going to be an abbey called Waltham Abbey that claims to have secretly buried the body there.
Mm. All
right. So William may have hoped that English would surrender following his victory, but they did not. Instead, some of the English clergy and magnates nominated Edgar the Etheling as king. Though their support for Edgar was only lukewarm, after quickly conquering southern England, William would return turn his army back towards London, burn everything along the way, take the city, and everybody would quickly submit.
So like a General Sherman type thing.
William liked burning things down.
Yeah.
You need to know that about William. All right. He's going to send forces into London to build a castle, which he also loved doing. He built all sorts of castles all over England. And he is going to be crowned at Westminster Abbey on Christmas Day 1066. All right. So William would begin to build castles, like I said, all over England as a show of power, because he was having a problem winning over the local populace. William's biggest threat, though, would come from the north. In 1068, Edwin of Merica.
Merica?
Merica. M-E-R-I-C-A. was supposed to marry one of William's wives. I mean, sisters. Wait.
What
daughters. Daughters,
yeah.
Not one of William's wives. That would make things really weird.
Yeah.
However, this never happened, so he rebelled. The rebellion was put down. Edwin is going to be killed as he's trying to escape to Scotland. Early 1069, you're going to have another revolt in the north, this time in York. Basically, William responds swiftly, takes that down, and then proceeds to burn down most of northern England.
Mm.
It said it takes Northern England somewhere between 100 to 200 years to recover economically.
Man.
Because he literally burnt the whole thing down. That's what he does.
Yeah.
And then basically, as he rules, he's just got this, he's constantly has these issues where he's just going back and forth between England and Normandy, putting out fires. Where like, all right, people are rebelling against him in England, so he's going to go in there, kill all those people, burn everything down on the ground. And what he typically does is he finds some of his own nobles, and he gives them the land because he knows they're going to be loyal. Then there's another rebellion in Normandy, so he's got to go back to Normandy and put that one down, and England fires up.
So he's stopping fires by starting fires.
Yes, but that's basically what he does his whole life.
Yeah,
as King of England. It's just continually putting out all these things. So William as king. William had many castles, keeps, and moats built as a show and force of England, like we already said. One of the most famous was the White Tower, which is now the Tower of London.
Mm.
And apparently he brought that form of architecture to England, kind of like a Romanesque style of architecture. It also contributed to the expansion of feudalism in England. Because once again, he gave land to his lords, in turn they would provide him military service. And thank for that. All right. We're out of time.
Oh, no. Your computer started.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. By the time of his death, he had replaced most of the Anglo-Saxon nobility with Normans throughout this process. He is then going to create the Domesday Book, spelled Domesday, but pronounced Doomsday, as a survey of the landholdings held by himself and his vassals. Domesday Book has become an extremely valuable primary source for medieval England.
I thought the Domesday Book was going to be like some, like a kind of like, oh, I'm predicting that England will fall unless I am king.
Like a Nostradamus
type
book? Yeah. When I teach world history, a lot of people are disappointed by what the Domesday Book actually is. It's basically just a census.
Yeah.
But he collects information on everybody. Listing for each county gives the holdings of each landholder, grouped by owners. Listings describe the holding, who owned the land before the conquest, its value, its tax assessment, usually the number of peasants, plows, and any other sources that the holding had. That way he could properly tax the people, and if you were acting up against him, he knew how to hit you.
Mm.
He knew what to go after. William's exact motivation in ordering the survey is unclear, but it was probably, like I said, make record of feudal obligations and justify increased taxation. William would also replace the church elite that was made up primarily of Anglo-Saxons with Normans. So he's pretty much completely ridding the upper class of England of Anglo-Saxons, which are Germanic,
mm-hmm.
with Normans, which are going to be more culturally French. All right. As a result, Normans now controlling the upper echelon of English society, the English language would see major changes. And this is probably one of the biggest impacts of the Norman conquest of England, is how it alters the English language. All right. Because prior to this, they were speaking Old English, which is very Germanic. Okay. If you heard someone speaking Old English to you, you would not be able to recognize it. It almost sounds like an elf language and looks like an elf language. All right. But the Normans spoke French. And what you're going to see is you're going to see a blending of the two. And this is going to create a more modern form of English, which is more recognizable today. French was spoken by the upper class and those in power, while Old English was spoken by the masses. This is why words like parliament, duke, and prison derive from Old French. Meanwhile, animals retain their Old English names, such as swine, cattle, and sheep, because Anglo-Saxons were primarily the farmers that were raising them. But those eating the meat tended to be Normans, and that's why we call swine pork, and that's why we call cattle beef, and sheep mutton, because those are the French names for it. Same can be seen as jobs. Commoner jobs like baker, miller, and shoemaker are of English origin. Well, more skilled trades like mason, painter, tailor, and merchant are French. Some were completely replaced. Crime replaced firin. Place replaced stow. People replaced liad. Beautiful replaced wittig. I don't even know if I would say that.
I'm kind of glad.
W-L-T-I-G.
I'm kind of glad they replaced those ones.
Uncle replaced eum. You see how, like, Old English was just completely unrecognizable.
Yeah.
Some new English words are a combination of the French and Old English. Gentle was French, and it merged with Germanic man, the form gentleman.
Uh-huh.
Words of the same meaning survive. That's one reason why modern English has so many synonyms. Liberty and freedom.
Mm.
Battle and fight. Desire and wish. Annual and yearly. Currently, there's over 7,000 words of French origin still used in modern English. And then that also the way some words are pronounced shifted as well.
Hmm.
I forgot what they cut out. There was a consonant sound that was cut out. I forgot what it was. But it's a really interesting study if you really are into linguistics of how English has changed over time.
All right.
And then as England gets more in with the Pope and the Catholic Church, that's when you start seeing Latin start infiltrating English. All sorts of, you got Norse words from the Vikings that are in the north. That's what our days are named after. Thursday is literally Thor's day and things like that.
Yeah.
All right. So William's death and funeral is just going to be just as chaotic as his life. In 1087, William led an expedition against the French. However, he had gained weight. And like most people in a midlife crisis, does not like to admit that he has gained weight, and he tries to get in his armor suit from when he was a younger person. Needless to say, it's very snug. During the battle, his horse stops suddenly, and the pommel of his saddle punches him in the gut.
Mm.
What it ends up doing, though, is it ruptures his intestines. And he dies a couple weeks later from his wounds, basically as all that stuff is like spilling out into his body and contaminating it. Probably died of sepsis, if I had to guess. His body is going to be sent to Cain for the burial. The funeral had a rough start from the beginning. The funeral, attended by the bishops and abbots of Normandy, as well as his son Henry, was disturbed by the assertion of a citizen of Cannes who alleged that his family had been illegally displaced of the land where the church was built, and he wanted to be paid for it.
That's not something good to have at your funeral.
No. And well, they're like, oh yeah, this guy's right. We kind of just built this church on his land. Okay. A further indignity occurred when the corpse was lowered into the tomb. It was too large for the space. Like I said, he had gained some weight. The intendants are going to force the body into the tomb. And what had happened is they didn't really have embalming practices back then. So they literally just kind of threw you in a box and lowered you.
Ah.
Well, all that gas from his intestines was just building up and building up. And so he became extremely bloated. So when they try pushing him into this hole, his body explodes. And they say a smelly goo flew out of him all over the people of the church.
Oh.
And they said smell just rancid, as you can imagine it coming from the intestines.
Yeah.
Well, people freak out. And they start running around, knocking over candles, and the church catches on fire. Probably one of the worst funerals ever.
Yeah, probably.
But that's how it goes out, with this church catching on fire.
Going out
He was a fire starter.
He's going out with a bang.
Yes, he literally went out with a bang. His body went... Poof. So, that story, William the Conqueror. A lot of historians consider him one of the more important people in terms of European history because of his impact.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Join us next season.
Woo!
Woo!
Thank you for tuning in to History Class After Hours, the show where we talk about the things your history teachers didn't have time to teach you. If you wanted to stay updated on upcoming events for the History Club, please visit www.starsmillhistoryc.wixsite.com/2020. If you liked this episode, please share it with your friends and subscribe to our channel on iTunes Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Be on the lookout for new episodes, and we'll be posting every week. Until next time, stay curious.